Welcome to Nightlife, the podcast.
Hey, Sarah.
Hello. Look, as a film critic, I'm a fan of all genres, but that does definitely include rom-coms.
What do you love, like a good rom-com? What's it got, do you think?
One of the things I love about this genre in general is its adaptability and its universality. That it's a genre that is so frequently derided for leaning upon cliches and tropes, but rom-coms are often masters at weaving across other genres. You know, a great rom-com might also be a movie about movies and a musical, or it might be a teen film and a Shakespeare adaptation, or a Christmas movie, or it could be drawn from reality. It is, you know, this genre that does fall into so many other areas. And because it's a genre that is dealing with, you know, one of the most ubiquitous and relatable experiences there is, falling in love, there is, you know, something about this that we always relate to this genre, no matter, you know, whether it is a good or a bad example. There's a really fantastic moment in one of the movies we're going to talk about tonight, Materialists, which released in cinemas this year. There's a scene where it's about a matchmaker, and there's a scene where the matchmaker that's at the heart of the film is told by an ex-boyfriend that she shouldn't be stressed about work because it's just dating, it's not so serious. And she hits back immediately and says, you know, okay, so it's just girl stuff, like, you know, not serious, calling him out for it. And I think that that's really astute, because there is this idea that dating, romance, anything to do with them in cinema and literature, it's not serious. We have the term chick flick that comes to mind, for instance. But for everybody, is there anything that's much more serious than falling in love and who you choose to spend your life with? So, yeah, I guess I can say I definitely love
them. You definitely love them. Well, you are jumping through the list. And as I look through the short list we've got at the moment, but I know it's going to be expanded by Nightlife listeners tonight, we've got all of it, the Christmas movies, the teen flick, the musicals as well, and of course they're all romantic comedies. But please add to the list tonight of rom-coms. 1-300-800-222 is the number, and the text line is 0467-922-702. I want to talk more about whether they're dead or dying, Sarah, but let's just turn quickly to Richard, who's calling from Clontarf. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I just cannot say enough about Love Actually.
Oh, you are a man my own heart, Richard. I love it.
Oh, I honestly love it. I saw it first, and, you know, people like Bill Nye and all these crazy guys. It's just such a good movie. It's funny. It's heartwarming. It's got every element in it to make you really love that movie. I watch it every single Christmas, and I've also got a copy of it as well.
This I went to see on the big screen this year. Well, not this year, technically last year, just a few weeks ago, Richard, because they're starting to show it on the big screen every year now. Have you done that again?
Man, it's just the best. I mean, there are two movies that I love, and they're quite opposite. One is The Magnificent Seven with Yul Brynner, the Western.
Very different to Love Actually, Richard.
Absolutely, but I just adore Love Actually. I think that is my number one movie. It really is.
Wonderful. I love that you've called in about it, Richard. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
His favourite rom-com is Love Actually. Where do you stand on this one, Sarah Ward? Because people are a little divided. There are people who hate it.
But I don't love it and I don't hate it. I can see why it's enjoyable, and I do remember seeing it at the cinema for the first time when it was released, when it was really at the peak of kind of, you know, the British rom-com craze, where it started with Four Weddings and a Funeral, Notting Hill, basically Hugh Grant movies. We got one every couple of years. You know, Richard Curtis was generally the writer. They're very much fit into that genre, and it's very entertaining. I don't think it's one I would watch every year myself, but I do understand why people love it. And I do also understand there's some problematic storylines in there that probably...
I'm totally with you on that. My daughter and I walked out from the cinema and went, yeah, probably some problems with this and that. But the one thing I would say about it is that you felt like you were sitting amongst kindred spirits. No one's going to the big screen to see that movie after all these years unless they do love it. So... There is something about sitting amongst your tribe and enjoying a film that feels so good. And interestingly, I do feel like we're having to hark back to older times because, you know, and we'll talk a bit about this throughout our discussion tonight about why, like, why is it that fewer rom-coms are going to the big screen, Sarah?
Well, I mean, you think about the films that make a lot of money in cinemas these days, and they're big franchises. They are things, you know, like Avatar 3 and, you know, the latest Marvel movie and things like that. One of the interesting things that bucked that trend this year is in the top 15 movies at the Australian box office this year was a romantic comedy. It was the latest Bridget Jones movie, Mad About the Boy. You know, that is a hugely successful franchise. But interestingly, so it released in cinemas here, made a lot of money. In the UK, it was the second highest box office hit of the year after only a Minecraft movie. In the US, though, it went straight to streaming. Missed out on all that money that it could have made, even though it's a proven hit franchise. It stars an American who was Oscar nominated the first time round for playing Bridget Jones, and yet went straight to streaming. Mm. So we are being conditioned, you know, have been for a couple of decades now in cinemas that we go for the spectacle. Studios expect that we're going for, you know, the latest superhero movie, the latest Tom Cruise doing whatever stunts he's doing, you know, those big blockbuster types. And films that don't fit into that, including romantic comedies, are more increasingly going to streaming, going straight to streaming. We're getting a few rom-coms here and there. Mainly independent films, really, that are kind of getting in cinema slots, but those big ones, streaming or TV is taking over in terms of episodic rom-coms, and there are some examples in terms of series, things like Nobody Wants This or Australia's Own Colin from Accounts that have been huge hits on streaming because people do want to see rom-coms, but we're just not getting them in cinemas.
Yeah, it isn't that Sleepless in Seattle, Pretty Woman, you know, those big box office successes of the 90s and later in the noughties as well. Well, look, let's list a few. If they are dead or dying, they're certainly not going to be dead on our watch. Tonight, they are well and truly alive. I want you to contribute to this list too. If you're listening to Nightlife tonight, my name's Bern Young. Sarah Ward is with me, a film critic for Screen International, and we are talking rom-coms. What is your favourite? 1-300-800-222 or on the text line 0467-922-702. You were saying before that they can mix genres. It can be a rom-com and a musical.
You sure look lovely in the moonlight, Kathy.
Now that you have the proper setting, can you say it?
I'll try. Life was a song. You came along. I've laid awake the whole night through. If I but dared to think you cared, this is what I'd say to you. You were meant for me.
Legends, of course, Gene Kelly, Debbie Reynolds, Singing in the Rain. But it's a romantic comedy, isn't it?
It is indeed. Look, this is my favourite romantic comedy. It's a film that, you know, came out in 1952, absolutely stands the test of time, and is a film that a number of recent films have been riffing on or paying tribute to. Not the Downton Abbey that came out last year, but the second Downton Abbey film has a storyline that is basically Singing in the Rain. Damien Chazelle, the director of La La Land and Babylon, in both of those films either paid tribute to or directly reference Singing in the Rain. It is this great rom-com, this great movie about movies, a great Hollywood satire, and, you know, a gorgeous musical, as you would expect when you have a film starring Gene Kelly.
Yeah. Why do you think something like this stands the test of time? And do you, I suppose? I'm imagining you do, but why?
I think that this stands the test of time because it has some fundamentals of the genre. You know, it's really about following your heart above all else and being yourself. So the storyline is that, you know, it's set in Hollywood. It's about two huge movie stars of the silent era. Just as the talkies are starting to come in, they've made a new movie, but talkies are the big thing. So they're told, no, you need to convert this. This now needs to be a talkie. Gene Kelly plays Don Lockwood. He's great to, you know, jump into talkies, but his co-star, Lena Lamont, doesn't have the voice for talkies or the diction. So they're trying to work out how to translate that. And then you've got this meet-cute that happens at the same time with another fellow actor, Don Lockwood. Gene Kelly's character literally jumps into her car while she's driving. She's not particularly impressed, but of course sparks fly. You know there's going to be a romance. Her job for the new movie is to provide the voice, but without the main star knowing that she's actually the singing voice. So you have, you know, this story that gets to at its heart, you know, trusting your heart over appearances, remaining true to yourself. You know, these very relatable and very resonant and universal themes. It's a film that then works so charmingly with that and with its story, the satire, the romance, the songs, the singing, the dancing, the stars. It's really kind of no wonder.
Absolutely.
Keep borrowing from it now.
Yeah. Now, you just used that term meet cute. I think we need to explain this little bit of jargon, don't we? It's an essential part of any romantic comedy. What's the meet cute?
So it is that rom-com staple. Two strangers having a memorable first encounter where sparks first start to fly. They might not get along, but, you know, there's something there. These two people, you know, something comes between them, whether they're arguing, whether they're bantering, whether they are instantly falling in love. Usually, as I said, in a memorable way. Someone literally jumping into a driving passing car definitely counts as a meet-cute.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is definitely a meet-cute and a memorable one for all of us who have seen this movie. And I would wonder if there's anybody who hasn't seen When Harry Met Sally, written by Nora Ephron. You can talk more about that. Directed by Rob Reiner, who, of course, we've only just lost. Billy Crystal, Meg Ryan, of course, Harry and Sally. And this is part of that meet-cute. They're on the road trip, leaving Chicago, heading to New York. Sally's driving. Harry starts eating grapes and rather obnoxiously spitting the seeds. I think we all remember, though, that the window's not down.
Why don't you tell me the story of your life?
The story of my life?
We've got 18 hours to kill before we hit New York.
The story of my life isn't even going to get us out of Chicago. I mean, nothing's happened to me yet. That's why I'm going to New York.
So something happened to you?
Yes.
Like what?
Like I'm going to journalism school to become a reporter.
So you can write about things that happen to other people.
That's one way to look at it.
Suppose nothing happens to you. Suppose you live there your whole life and nothing happens, you never meet anybody, you never become anything, and finally you die one of those New York deaths that nobody notices for 2 weeks until the smell drifts into the hallway.
Amanda mentioned you had a dark side.
Oh my God, that spitting out of the seeds all the way through that scene is just a clap. Well, that's a brilliant meet cute, right?
It is indeed, and it does set up the idea of the entire film in that as part of that conversation, part of this drive, you know, Harry says to Sally that he thinks that women and men can't be friends. The sex part always gets in the way. And then you have this film that interrogates that idea. It is interesting in that, you know, a lot of romantic comedies take place over the course of maybe it's just one night or a couple of nights, a couple of days, a few weeks, a few months. This is a 12-year love story that, you know, unpacks that idea because they are strangers, they're acquaintances, they're friends, they have a relationship, they become exes. You really dive into that across the course of this film.
1-300-800-222 is my number. Sarah Ward is with me, a film critic, and we are talking rom-coms. We'd love to know your favourite. Heaps are coming in on the text line, Sarah, which is 0467-922-702. Since I've mentioned Rob Reiner, who directed When Harry Met Sally, this, of course, Princess Bride. This is from Wolf near Maryborough in Queensland. What a cracker. Rest in peace, Rob Reiner. Wolf says, thumbs up also to Love Actually, another fan of Love Actually on the text line tonight. Chris the Night Watch reckons a 1980 movie with Christopher Reeve, I don't know if I know this one, Somewhere in Time. Are you familiar with that one, Sarah?
I have seen it, but not for a very long time.
Okay, well, Chris is making it one of the best rom-coms around. Peter reckons Goodbye Girl with Richard Dreyfuss was a classic. And Ryan from Ballarat says anything by Gaspar Noé is worth watching. And Kathy at Somerset reckons, and we will get to this one, The Proposal and also The Holiday. The Holiday, is it, do you think The Holiday is that one where if you don't like Love Actually, you like The Holiday? Or where do you stand on The Holiday?
Perhaps. I think that The Holiday, look, it's a classic of the genre, but it is one of those films that it's not particularly great. It's very, very formulaic. I do just want to say that I think that our friend who texted in recommending the films of Gaspar Noé is probably being a little bit cheeky. Just his films aren't really rom-coms.
Okay.
He's a director that made films like Irreversible and Climax and, yes, just for listeners.
Okay. Okay.
I wouldn't go seeking out his films for rom-coms.
Thanks for putting us off track there this evening. That text line 0467 922 702. But I'd love you to call through 1-300-800-222, especially if you're one of those sending me messages about Moonstruck. Now, I haven't grabbed any Moonstruck tonight, but surely that's a classic rom-com, Moonstruck, with Cher, of course. Nicolas Cage. I haven't seen it in years. When did you last watch it, Sarah?
I only watched it a couple of years ago because I'm incredibly fascinated with Nicolas Cage. And one of the things he does in this film, and he does it so often, you know, he has recently, he's been pumping out movies. You know, he's obviously getting paid by popping up in all sorts of movies. But when he commits himself to a role, and you see it in Moonstruck, you see the level of commitment that he has as this love-struck guy. You know, it's really quite something special when Nicolas Cage is, you know, really at full Nicolas Cage. And Moonstruck is a wonderful example of that.
I love it. When Nicolas Cage is at full Nicolas Cage, the world is a good place. We are talking rom-coms. I'd love you to join the conversation tonight. Sarah Ward is a film critic with Screen International. We're putting together a little bit of a list here, but it's growing by the moment, thanks to you. Mostly on the text line, but call through as well, 1-300-800-222. Now, this next one is, well, sort of a musical at times. I think more importantly, it would be seen as a teen rom-com. I'm going back to 1999. It is a personal favorite, Sarah. 10 Things I Hate About You. Heath Ledger, of course. Julia Stiles. It's this adaptation, interestingly, of the Shakespeare comedy Taming of the Shrew. Julia Stiles plays the stubborn tomboy cat. She's, you know, playing soccer and guitar and loves her girl grunge bands. And all, you know, maybe we'd say that's a reductive way of showing she's not a girly girl. Her sister Bianca, of course, is the opposite to all of that. And one of the jocks at the high school, just in case you don't know the storyline, wants to date Bianca. But Bianca's not allowed to date unless Kat goes out on a date. And one of the guys comes up with an idea.
I can't take out her sister until Kat starts dating. You see, their dad's whacked out. He's got this rule where the girls are...
That's a touching story. It really is. Not my problem.
Would you be willing to make it your problem if I provide generous compensation?
You're going to pay me to take out some chick?
Mm-hmm.
How much?
$20.
Yeah, it ends up being a bit more than $20, and the story goes on. What do you think works for 10 Things I Hate About You, Sarah?
Firstly, I'm just going to say that 1999, when this film came out, was such a wonderful year for Heath Ledger movies. You not only had this, but the Australian film Two Hands, just, you know, a classic year for, you know, an actor that if you rewatch this now, you realize how much we miss having him on screen. He's so fantastic in this. But this is a film that, you know, teen rom-coms had a firm heyday in the 90s, and there was this kind of sense of trickery or a gimmick that was really key to a number of films in the genre. Even if you think of something like Clueless, where updating Jane Austen's Emma has, you know, Cher giving Ty a makeover to play matchmaker, you've got She's All That, Never Been Kissed. They all kind of do that This does that as well with its, you know, we have to pay Patrick to take out Kat so that Bianca can also have a date. But it really finds the right way into it. What's really interesting about this as well is that, you know, as a Shakespeare adaptation, it does take its source material and go, you know, we are absolutely updating this for the times. Another trend at the time you had, you know, just before this, you had Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. Afterwards, you had things like Get Over It. There was a version of Othello called O that also had Julia Stiles. She's the Man. So it's tying into kind of all of these trends, which a lot of rom-coms that we will talk about do. They tend to kind of sit somewhere on a spectrum that these things are happening in film and they might be at the beginning or in the middle of it. They bring all of these trends together. But this film works as a rom-com, as a Shakespeare adaptation, as a high school film. And it does have, you know, that wonderful singing scene as well of Heath Ledger serenading Julia Stiles. It is one of the great 90s teen films and one of the great rom-coms in general.
Yeah, that serenading scene is where you do think, oh, we do miss you, Heath, and what a talent he was, you know, because he's playing an Australian in the film, so he gets to be quite, well, as authentic as any actor is, I suppose, when they're playing a character. But a lot of that kind of very Aussie teenage boy kind of comes through in all of it. Something I'm picking up on here, and I want to turn to a text message that's come in from Stephen, who's listening in Aberfoyle Park, and he says, "Hi, Bern and Sarah. No, I say, forget rom-coms. They are primarily for women, Stephen reckons. We need more hilarious comedy mixed genre, destined to be cult hits forever. I can only be talking about things like The Big Lebowski, also from the 1990s, so memorable because of the Coen Brothers script, as Jeff Bridges says while you are watching it, new keeps coming to light." Stephen, interesting point. I mean, a couple of the movies we've talked about, you know, were written by women. Karen McCulloch-Lutz and Kirsten Smith wrote 10 Things I Hate About You. Nora Ephron, of course, is the writer. I know we talk about Rob Reiner when it comes to When Harry Met Sally, but without the script, that movie can't, you know, that's the movie, isn't it? So what do you make of that and the role of women in creating these movies, Sarah?
An interesting thing with When Harry Met Sally is that Nora Ephron, absolutely the writer, but part of it is based on Rob Reiner's relationship with his wife, Michelle Singer Reiner, and part of the storyline changed as they got together. Nora Ephron did interviews with, you know, people in the production company and kind of drew in those real life details. And part of the interviews that you see in the film with actors, of course, are built on that. So there is a real life basis. But I think it can be a bit of a cliche that rom-coms, again, chick flicks, they are gender-coded. But falling in love's for everybody. We all fall in love. I don't think that, you know, they are. I think perhaps that was a handy marketing way into them to begin with. And you do still see it now. There are cinemas that still exist now that have chicks at the flicks nights and things like that. But I think rom-coms are really for everybody. Just like a good comedy about anything. Yeah. Lebowski is for anybody. And then, of course, you know, you have queer romantic comedies as well that are absolutely for everybody. So I don't like classing them as chick flicks at all.
I've got so many text messages coming through. Please forgive me if I don't read yours out because it's moving so quickly tonight, but I'll turn to the phones at the moment and get to a few more text messages in a minute. Melissa is on the line. Hi, Melissa.
Hello. I love the topic of your conversation tonight.
Yeah, it makes you almost want to curl up and watch a rom-com, but don't. Stay on the radio. I want you to stay listening. I've got Trent Dalton programming the music next hour, and I promise you don't want to miss it. Honestly, so good. So don't go and watch your favourite rom-com yet, Melissa, but what is your favourite rom-com?
I love watching He's Just Not That Into You.
He's Just Not That Into You. It is a classic line as well.
Yeah.
It's almost, even if you, it's just, you know, it's repeated. Well, he's just not that into you, you know.
I know.
What do you love about it, Melissa?
I love all the different scenarios, and I love that it is a classic line. Like, women will not see that he's just not into you. And I just love all the different scenarios where they're pretty much playing that out and everyone's mismatching in their love. And you know, women who overread into men's signals and what they do when they're pretty straightforward. So I just think it's fantastic. It just always delights me. It just cracks me up every time.
And the cast. I mean, what a cast.
Yeah.
Jennifer Aniston, Ben Affleck, Drew Barrymore, Jennifer Connelly's in it, isn't she? Bradley Cooper? Scarlett Johansson, Sarah, you can probably add to my list.
Oh, look, it's a ridiculous list. There was, I think, Kevin Connolly from the, who's probably best known for things like Entourage, Jennifer Goodwin, who we've been hearing recently voicing Zootopia 2. It's such a huge cast. And it's one of those, there was this real trend around the time that came out of, it's not really an anthology film, but, you know, stitching together different rom-com stories. We had films like New Year's Eve, you know, a lot of different romance stories all in one film, kind of giving, it's smart, giving audiences multiple ways into it. Perhaps you don't connect with one romance story, but you connect with another. Something else is closer to your experience. You know, because that can be something, a great rom-com is relatable. You should relate to it. But if you don't buy into the story, maybe it's not for you. Films that have a number of overlapping storylines give audiences a number of ways into it. So, and you could really love it because you love one part of it and maybe another part not so much.
Yeah. Melissa, great suggestion tonight. I will add it to the list. It's a very big list at the moment. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Nice to have you listening tonight. 1-300-800-222. Have you got a favorite rom-com? Tell me why. 1-300-800-222. And on the text line, 0467-922-702. Although, Sarah, I don't know if I can keep up with the number of text messages I'm getting through at the moment. So let me see if I can catch up on a few that came in earlier. This from Knowles, who's listening in Quereting in WA. Howdy, rom-coms As Good As It Gets with Jack Nicholson, of course, and Helen Hunt. Also Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And Knowles reckons even Bruce Willis movies are rom-coms. Without the being, something's gone. I don't know what word you've written there. To guess who gets with who. Being asked, perhaps it was meant to be, to guess who gets with who. What do you think of As Good As It Gets, Jack Nicholson, Helen Hunt?
Oh, look, they both won well-deserved Oscars for their performances there. And it is a really, like at the time it was huge, and it is a really moving movie. James L. Brooks, the director behind it, has had a new film in cinemas recently that sadly is not up to those heights whatsoever. But, you know, Jack Nicholson is also one of those actors that when you watch anything that he's in, you wish that he was, you know, obviously Jack Nicholson is still with us, but he's not active in front of the screen the way that he used to. And you wish that he was when you watch something like this. He's really great, particularly in Good As It Gets.
Yeah, Mary at Box Hill has a few favourites. Moonstruck's coming up quite regularly, in fact. She's added in there Pride and Prejudice. I don't know. I mean, there's certainly romantic. Do we consider it a rom-com? It feels more like a romantic drama.
But there are a lot of films that can, you know, be on the cusp of comedy and drama, and sometimes it depends on the adaptation, you know. But yeah, I would be with you that I would class it more, you know, even just a straight romance or a romantic drama more than a rom-com. There's definitely Jane Austen stories that are more comedic than Pride and Prejudice for sure.
Yeah. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days is getting a lot of love on the text line. I think Jim might have sent that one to me. And who else I've got? I'm really trying to keep up with these text messages. Kelly loves it as well as 16 Candles. So there's a few of the teen flicks coming through the ranks as well. Greg from Port Elliot says, Love Actually, a horrible film that says stalking works. Groundhog Day, though, a classic film where the guy has to evolve to make the relationship work. Greg, great suggestion, Groundhog Day. How have we not seen that one pop up on the text line until now, do you think, Sarah?
Oh, look, absolutely. It really is. It's a film about repetition, and it really is a film that you can watch over and over and over again and never get sick of. And Annie McDowell had that wonderful rom-com period in the early 90s. Of course, you know, Four Weddings and a Funeral, you know, wouldn't be the movie it is without her, and Groundhog Day exactly the same.
Yeah. Now, Wendy is saying, and this is why we're talking about rom-coms tonight, is because they do seem to be, well, certainly less likely to turn up on the big screen as a big hit movie. And Wendy says, I'm not that keen on contemporary rom-coms. Those that I recall grabbing my attention, and she's going right back, An Officer and a Gentleman, Strictly Ballroom, Gone with the Wind even. Again, I don't know if I'd put that into rom-com, but romantic, sure. I don't really regard the likes of Hugh Grant, Nicolas Cage and Richard Dreyfuss particularly attractive or romantic. Now, that's interesting. Let's talk about this, Sarah. Do you have to be attractive to be, you know, the main character, the wanted character in the rom-com? Because often it isn't. It's the nerd or, I don't know, the ugly guy even. You know, think of Roxanne.
Well, that's one of the things, one of the ideas at the heart of this genre is that you shouldn't be trusting, you know, appearances and perceptions, and you should be going for what's important to you. It comes through again and again and again in these movies. Even something like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, which falls into something that the genre does a lot in that they're basically a how-to guide. You know, these are all the traits that people don't want when you're dating. You know, she's absolutely trying to turn him off. But it is a film that, you know, it is about, at the end of the day, she's doing this for a job. He's got his own bet on, you know, the sides. We've got Kate Hudson, Matthew McConaughey. But at the end of the day, they're just going to be true to themselves. You know, love's going to win out. And that's what these films are about. So I think that it doesn't matter, you know, these films aren't about you go for the most classically handsome guy. Something like The Holiday, you know, kind of bakes that into its storyline as well. But a lot of them do. You know, you have these films where it's, you know, it's not the charming guy, you know, the guy that seems like he's the ideal. Think of the Bridget Jones movies where you have Hugh Grant as Daniel Cleaver, you know, seemingly like this, you know, charming, suave, and then you have Colin Firth, which, you know, not a bad romantic alternative whatsoever, but more standoffish, more awkward. You know, this genre thrives on the idea that it isn't just about the most handsome person in the room. And, of course, that these things are subjective. You know, who is drop-dead gorgeous to one person may not be to the next person, and, yeah. And that is thing that rom-coms, you know, tap into all the time as well.
Well, I mean, I guess we could argue over who's drop-dead gorgeous, but I don't think too many people would disagree about Jude Law, for instance.
I can't figure out the mathematics of this. I just know I love you. Can't believe how many times I'm saying it. And I never thought I'd feel this way again, so that's pretty phenomenal. And I realise I come with a package deal. Three for the price of one. And my package, perhaps in the light of day, isn't all that wonderful, but I finally know what I want. And that in itself is a miracle. And what I want is you.
We could have finished that line for him, couldn't we, Sarah? What I want is you. Of course it is, as he talks to Cameron Diaz, isn't it? She's playing the opposite to Jude Law in that movie, The Holiday.
She is indeed, where the idea. So romantic comedies have a lot of swap films, but usually they're high concept body swap films. Australia's own Dating the Enemy with Guy Pearce and Claudia Carvin from the 90s that is a great example. But, you know, you can even think of things like Suddenly 30, where kids become their adult selves, etc. But here, The Holiday, simple home swap. You have, you know, Los Angeles resident Amanda, newly single. She wants to get away from Christmas. She agrees to swap her home with Iris in Surrey, who spent years pining after an ex-boyfriend who's recently become engaged but is still stringing her along. So you get Kate Winslet going from London to Los Angeles. You get Cameron Diaz making the reverse journey. And at either end, Jude Law and Jack Black as their new kind of romantic potentials while they have swapped homes.
A girlfriend and I argue over this because I love Love Actually, and she loves The Holiday. So she reckons I'm wrong, and I reckon she's wrong, because I can't stand The Holiday. I just found it so corny. But she loves it the same way I love Love Actually. So each to their own, I suppose, sometimes with these films. I just want to turn to the text line, which we'll do in just a moment, 0467 922 702. But pick up that phone, have a chat. Sarah Ward's with me. She's a film critic for Screen International. We are talking rom-coms tonight.
It's the pointy end of home renovations.
This is brilliant.
Transforming a fixer-upper into the home of their dreams. Share their ups and downs on new Grand Designs Transformations. Starts Thursday, January 8th on ABC TV and ABC iView.
This is Nightlife with Bern Young on ABC Radio. Text 0467 922 702 or call 1300 800 222.
Yeah, jump on that phone line or send me a text, as so many others are. I haven't got a name on this text. Fantastic rom-com is About a Boy. We just rewatched it after many years. It's a Nick Hornby book, a bloke rom-com as opposed to the typical chick flick, this texter says. Hugh Grant is fantastic, and Toni Collette, of course, is brilliant. Someone else suggesting Valley Girl. Sorry, Sarah, cut you off. What were you thinking About a Boy?
I was just going to say a very young Nicholas Hoult, you know, who now we see in films like playing Lex Luthor in the most recent Superman, but that's where he got his start, and he's really, really great in that as well.
Yeah. Knowles has just listed basically the ultimate list: Sleepless in Seattle, Roxanne, Bridget Jones, Serendipity, Legally Blonde, Notting Hill, Three Weddings and a Funeral, and I am a huge rom-com watcher. No joke, Knowles, with a list like that. You couldn't even choose one. Sandy in WA, hi to you, Sandy. Hi, gals. An oldie, but a fave. Pretty Woman. Richard Gere, Say No More, Sandy says. What else have we got here? Oh, here we go. Toni says, Bern, my favourite rom-com actress is Meg Ryan. So with that, you've got to go When Harry Met Sally, followed closely by Sleepless in Seattle, and then You've Got Mail, which that's – have you rewatched You've Got Mail recently, Sarah?
I have not. I've rewatched When Harry Met Sally and Sleepless in Seattle recently, but You've Got Mail is my least favorite of the three, and I think it might be the case for a lot of people. So I haven't rewatched it in probably at least 15 years.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I rewatched it and I didn't like it as much as I thought I loved it at the time. There's still so many great moments in it, but there are some, you know, there are some elements to it where you just think, yeah, I'm not sure. This is from Hannah, who's listening in Sydney tonight. Hey, Bern, my two favourite rom-coms are Blue is the Warmest Colour and Show Me Love. It was originally released in Sweden under a different title. Both are movies where the main characters, where the two main characters are young women. And the movies helped me a lot when, and just give me a moment because it's just disappeared for a moment, when I first came out as same-sex attracted. And you were talking about that before, Sarah. Do we see a lot of same-sex rom-coms?
I wouldn't say that we see a lot, but we do, you know, it is a genre that across queer cinema is, you know, definitely right in there. It is something that, you know, we're not seeing as much of it in mainstream cinema, but if you go to any queer film festival, every, you know, major Australian city has one, you will see probably at least a third of the program from around the world are queer rom-coms. And then you have things like, one of the rare rom-coms that released in Australian cinemas this year actually was a queer rom-com. It was The Wedding Banquet, which was a remake. So back in the early 90s, an Ang Lee film called The Wedding Banquet, so, you know, before Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, it was a huge success. It won the top award at the Berlin Film Festival. And then it was remade this year in a film that co-starred Bowen Yang and, you know, taps into both cross-cultural romances and queer romances. So we are definitely getting them, but, you know, not, they're not filling the gap for where the rest of rom-coms have gone in terms of mainstream releases.
Now, Sarah, David from Tamworth on the text line is disagreeing with you and me about Pride and Prejudice. He says it's a crack up from start to finish. You just have to get on Jane Austen's wavelength. David, each to their own. If it's a rom-com to you, I'm glad you're enjoying it. Marilyn from Gimme a Bay is wondering, does Mrs. Doubtfire count as a rom-com? I would think so. What do you, I mean, it doesn't have a meet cute. Well, it kind of does when she finally meets her husband again, i.e. Mrs. Doubtfire.
I mean, I think that, look, I was a kid when Mrs. Doubtfire came out. So for me, I will always see it as more as a family comedy. You know, you're more seeing like Robin Williams, Mrs. Doubtfire and the kids rather than focusing on the romance. But there's definitely the romantic element to it. So again, you know, a lot of this is subjective. If you find something to be a romantic comedy, if something resonates with you in that way, and there are a lot of films that, because as we've been talking about, rom-coms can be a lot of different things. So romantic comedy may not be the main element of a movie, but it can still be in there.
All right. I want to get to one that you've already mentioned in a moment, but just a few more that are coming in on the text line tonight, 0467 922 702, as we talk about rom-coms. What's your favourite and why? I'm not getting a lot of the why on my text, which is why I'd love you to call through 1-300-800-222 and talk to me about these movies. Wendy at Ballarat says Notting Hill, great film and best soundtrack, Wendy reckons. Johnny at the Bay reckons Green Card. Wow, there's a movie I haven't even thought about for ages.
Andy McDowell again.
Yeah, there she is. She does it well, doesn't she?
She does indeed.
Han reckons Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, a musical but funny and romantic, and the family pick with separated parents getting back together, The Parent Trap with Hayley Mills, Han reckons, are both great rom-coms. What do you think?
Look, they both are examples of how broad-ranging the genre is. And The Parent Trap is one that, you know, we've seen come to the screen a number of times, including, I think, the 1998 version was a Nancy Meyers film. And she's behind so many films in the genre, including The Holiday. So, you know, you do have these, we talked about Rob Reiner before, we talked about Nora Ephron, you know, Nancy Meyers. You have these filmmakers that kind of live and breathe these genres. Rob Reiner did so many more things, but someone like Nancy Meyers, she did What Women Want, she did Something's Gotta Give, she did It's Complicated as well. Recently, there's been a filmmaker, Michael Showalter, who made The Big Sick, which is a really great example from, I think, almost 10 years ago now, and then has made, you know, a number of other romantic comedy since. You kind of get filmmakers that find their niche in the genre and then really run with it. And that sometimes that's when you get some real classics in the genre.
Well, you brought this one up right back at the start because we were saying there aren't as many to choose from these days. And you were talking about one that was released recently called Materialists. Now, this was a follow-up from Celine Song to her Oscar-nominated film, which I, you know, wept over this one. This is not a comedy, but it's certainly a romance, Past Lives, such a great film. But we won't discuss that one because we're talking about Materialists. And a lot has been written about the way this film is a cynical take on modern dating, you know, and revealing how transactional it's become. This is a little clip with Dakota Johnson and her suitor, played by Pedro Pascal.
I don't know if I like you or if I just like the places you take me to.
You like me? When did that happen?
I think when I saw the way you pick up the bill.
I do it really well, don't I?
You do. Just one swift motion. No hesitation, no fear.
Well, I can afford it, so why would I be scared?
Sarah, what do you think? Is it an anti-rom-com, if that's a thing?
I don't think it's anti at all. I think it's deeply, deeply romantic. So the premise is Lucy, played by Dakota Johnson, is a matchmaker. So her job, to find clients' love. And she likens herself in the film to working in insurance or in the morgue because her clients, it's all about height, weight, race, profession, wealth, demographic details. But then she herself finds herself, she's kind of caught. There we heard her with Pedro Pascal, who is the dream guy. You know, he has the money, the looks, he's so charming. But she has this deep affection for her ex-boyfriend, played by Chris Evans, who's a struggling actor who's getting by for a cater waiter. So she's kind of in this really unique situation in that her job is to help other people finding love, and she's got this conflict in her own life. The film is so deeply romantic in the way that it unpacks that, that it sees, it knows that modern dating these days might be explicit, vocal even, about, you know, that kind of checklist of traits that you're after in a partner. But love really is so much more than that. It's a film that actually starts with what could be the first couple ever getting married, goes back to Stone Age times with, you know, a couple exchanging a ring that is a flower, you know, twisted around, like its stem twisted around as a ring, and then digs into Lucy's predicament. You know, does she, like, what a choice to have Pedro Pascal or Chris Evans, but does she, you know, follow her heart and go purely for love, or does she go for that materialistic comfort that all of her clients just keep saying they want? Someone that's this height, this weight, this job, this amount of money in their bank account. I think it's a deeply romantic movie.
Yeah, you did get the chance to interview Celine Song after this film was released. What did she say about whether it fits the rom-com genre or whether it's too cynical for that?
One of the questions I asked her was whether she felt as though it was saying the quiet part out loud. You know, do we often turn around and say, look, dating, we're actually just looking for someone who ticks all of these boxes? Or, you know, is that something that we tend to keep closer to our chest? She worked as a matchmaker herself. So like Past Lives, this is partly drawn upon her own experience, not her own romantic life like Past Lives was, but the fact that she spent about 6 months as a matchmaker. And she thought it was really interesting that I saw it that way, that people weren't being as overt, because she said, you know, you look at things like TikTok, you look at social media, and people speak about love and dating as transactional. But she found that it was interesting because, you know, there is this clash between that transactional idea, you know, that love is as much, you know, economically motivated as it's ever been. You know, we might think that we don't live in Victorian era kind of romantic times now, but there's still that economic element for people when they're dating, when they're going through this checklist. But love is, you know, this, her words to her were me that to me were that it's an amazing ancient mystery. It's a complete miracle and the most beautiful, most dramatic thing that we can do in our lives. So how do those two elements, you know, clash together? How do they kind of sit side by side? So she's firmly in the romantic camp. And as I said, I think this is a deeply romantic movie, but it also happens to be one that is just really clear-eyed about the fact that, you know, perhaps that romantic idea isn't all that's driving everybody, but at the end of the day, you know, love is still love, no matter what checklist of traits you think you're working down.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.